providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are shifting our focus a little bit more back into the resource sector, but outside of just the precious metals. We are chatting with Doc Jones. He's becoming pretty well known on our website, also well known on a lot of the resource blogs out there as Dr. Jones because of, well, his articles and his insights into different companies that he likes and also breaking down some of the factors within different resource sectors that he thinks are either being overlooked or completely mistold to the market. Doc, we're going to start off with battery metals, more specifically nickel. Look, in the last couple of years, battery metals have really come back onto the radar, and that was after a period of time there where people weren't paying a whole lot of attention. But again, this is really the second run from what I can remember in the last maybe 5 or 6 years that battery metals have had all around this whole green initiative and the building out of new battery technologies. When it comes to nickel, that has been doing very well, still in an uptrend, what's your research shown you about the nickel market and where it could go here fundamentally?
Oh, hi, Corey. Thanks for having me back. It's interesting. You know, I think investors really need to be careful of just buying into the latest trend unless you really understand the industry. For example, nickel, there is lots of talk about shortages of class one nickel and prices were going to go sky high. But if you look back about 6 weeks ago, nickel had its largest 2-day drop in history. It dropped 22% in price. And the reason for that is Tangshan Holdings in China, they have these large pig iron nickel mines in Indonesia, but they also have a process in which they can convert that into class one nickel. And they've been doing that for years, but on a small scale, just when they needed to. But now, because nickel prices are favorable and there's a lot of demand for class one, they're expanding that capability. And therefore, that means that the market will be well supplied. Anytime there's not enough, they will produce more and capture the extra margin on doing that. So there'll be a floor on the nickel, but there'll also be a ceiling on the price because of that. So a lot of people, I see investors, they've dived into names that just have nickel in it, or they see a 2-meter intercept of 1% nickel, and they throw all their money into it without completely understanding. And what that means also is that it's less likely someone's going to build an underground mine for nickel sulfide, unless it's really huge and of a great grade, because they can convert, you know, pig iron nickel from an open pit into class one. So that's kind of the dark side of investing in resources. If you don't know the sector, if you don't understand what you're investing in, then don't. You really should have a working knowledge of it, and you'll avoid disappointment that way. And as far as within the battery metals, there's a lot of things going on. Like, the chemistry has not been set. So if you take, for instance, people are piling in the graphite, but they're also looking at replacing graphite with silicon. There's that going on. There's also, they're engineering out cobalt using a high magnesium battery. Magnesium, there'll be nickel in it, but even less nickel too, right? So that means less nickel, zero cobalt. So if you take away the future demand for cobalt in batteries, what are you left with? You're left with a cobalt price that's substantially lower. There's all those things, as well as, you know, you look at for grid storage, for example, they're engineering out the use of lithium in grid storage batteries for large capacity ones, where one of the possible chemistries is the zinc ion battery, which is a hell of a lot cheaper, charges faster, has a greater energy density. So the jury is still out, so to speak, on which of these battery metals are going to be the winners. So one should be very careful when investing. The only one that I know for sure that it's going to do well is copper, because, you know, as far as transporting electricity from point A to point B, you know, it's going to be copper. You're not going to use aluminum. You're not going to use silver. Those are much too expensive. So, you know, on the periodic table, copper is the clear winner.
It's one of those where all roads seem to lead back to copper, isn't it? Because battery metals, they are smaller markets, and yeah, they can go on these runs, but again, everyone needs copper to build out this infrastructure. Now, Doc Jones, does that mean that you're staying away from the battery metals sector? Is there still a couple select companies that have your attention?
Yeah, I'm pretty much staying away from it. I get my battery metal exposure through, the industrial metals, copper, zinc, lead. So that's how I'm playing it there. I'm not specifically in like a graphite or a lithium play, with those type of opaque markets for graphite and lithium, cobalt, unless a company has an offtake agreement and has a really large deposit as well as the financial capabilities to prove to the end consumer of whatever product they're producing that they will be around for years, that they can get the mine up and running, nothing's going to happen to that deposit. So yeah, that's how I'm getting my exposure that way. I'm also playing the battery metals through the opposite with investments in oil and gas, because for one thing, baseload power, nuclear still is not getting the traction that we all would hope that it would. Like recently, this report came out that production's falling in the U.S. again, and once things are reopened, the demand is going to be insatiable. So I'm looking at markets that have a built-in supply deficit on the horizon. So that would be oil, copper, zinc. Yeah. So those are my primary ones, and silver as well. I get silver exposure through polymetallic miners that also gets me my green energy exposure that way.
Okay. Hey, that all makes sense. Taking some of these other metals that, in all fairness, also have a lot more uses than just in the battery and electrification world or movement that we're going through. Let's talk about some of those base metals then. Copper and zinc. You've already outlined why you like copper. What about zinc? What's your research shown you about any of the maybe supply or demand imbalances upcoming?
Well, if you look at zinc on the supply side, there hasn't been any new zinc mines come on in the last decade of size that's going to be able to handle the demand that is rising right now. Zinc prices have exceeded a 3-year high as well. Even without the possible green energy demand, the galvanizing sector. We have iron ore prices at historic highs, steel production in China way up. We're coming out of a prolonged, protracted period of low to negative economic growth. The amount of stimulus and infrastructure spending that's going to be going on, we've got a minimum of 2 consecutive years of booming GDP growth, which is directly related to infrastructure spending, construction, all those things. You've got lumber. An all-time high. It's up, 300% in the last 2 years? All these things. And zinc also goes into a lot of other things besides galvanizing, rubber, brass, paints. All these things that will be needed for construction, either residential or commercial, as well as infrastructure. So that's what I really love about zinc. And it's also it's a market that most people don't really think about. Your retail investors are generally concerned with gold and silver, right? Maybe copper. But these other industrial metals are very important, and you can make a lot of money with them. So that's what I like about the zinc market. And you find a nice polymetallic producer or explorer that is going to be producing copper, zinc, lead, silver, maybe gold. You get all of them. You get them all at like one-stop shopping, so to speak. Yeah, so I think that's where investors need to look, especially right now because the jury's still out on gold as well. I think gold is stabilized, and I don't think we won't see below 1,500 an ounce. But I do think it'll be challenged to be above 2,000 in the next year. A year from now, I think gold will start to ramp up. But in a lot of cases, I think it's going to be dead money unless there's company-specific news flow. Myself, with gold, for example, I've only recently started to invest again after being out of that market for 6 months, putting all my investments on hold. And the only investment I made was with Trachy Gold, who you've had on your show. And that's primarily because they have a path to production and cash flow 8 months from now when they start processing tailings. So there will be cash flow. And once that cash flow comes, you can apply a multiple to it. And the market will do that, and that will create a floor for the stock as well as a great amount of appreciation when it reprices to its peers. You know, I'm looking at, you know, 2 to 4x just from that. And then you've got the exploration upside. So you get both things within the one company versus just an explorer, which I've seen. Like, I have a watch list of 200-300 companies, and I see explorers. They make a great discovery hole. The stock shoots up 40%, 50%, and within 2 weeks, it's down 30-40% from there. You know, the market's just not holding the gains when it comes to the gold explorers at this point.
So then, Doc, when you're looking at some of these base metal plays like copper and zinc plays, do you tend to stick with some of the bigger players then, or are you still diving down into some of these explorers or juniors, even though, let's face it, M&A has been painfully slow in these areas?
It's been a bit of both. You know, initially I'm starting to move into the explorers, but, you know, if you just look at the empirical data, you know, for example, look at the charts. If you look at Capstone, Freeport-McMoRan, Glencore, you know, all these big companies that go, I'm only going to make 20% or something in a year. These companies are up 500 to 1,000% in the last year and a half. All these producers, right? And they hold their gains, right? And they're making a lot of money, and they're not diluting, and there's no exploration risk because they already have the reserves, they're already in production, they're generating cash flow. Like, for example, Capstone just came out with their earnings. They paid off all their debt, the debt's free. They're generating millions and millions of dollars, right? The stock has gone from like 40, 50 cents a year ago to over $5 now, I believe, you know? And that's a boring ride, right? Retail investors, they want that thrill that, you know, make 10x in 2 weeks. And it rarely happens. That really, rarely happens. The best money that has been made in the last year, 2 years consistently has been in these larger cap companies that have a defined asset, the resource, the mill, the production. And as the prices rise, which we saw with the gold producers last year, their margins expand more rapidly than the price appreciation in gold. It's the same story. But we're at a point that I think it's time to look at those explorers, the polymetallic explorers, because people will see the shortages coming, and they have been ignored for so long that you can basically buy them for 3 or 4 cents on the dollar. You know, as far as the resource, or even less in some cases, that have a mineable resource, not just the resource, a mineable resource, right? My most recent investment was in Emerita Resources. It's EMO on the TSXV. I did a lot of research on them. I talked to the CEO, and as I say to people listening out there, retail investor, call the company, email them, ask to speak to someone there, the CEO or the CFO, and talk to them, ask them questions, learn things. You know, through my conversation, I learned a lot more about the company than I knew just going through CEDAR and all these other things. And that led me to something else where I was able to deduce that, you know, this company has been tied up in a legal battle for 5 or 6 years. It's been dead money. One of them was resolved recently, after which 3 hours later, Eric Sprott bought 10% of the company. And then the other legal battle is going to come to a conclusion in June, where they've been in court for 5 years. And right now, so far, 5 Supreme Court judges unanimously has sided with them. So it looks like they're going to get it. And the value of that is that there's 2 past producing mines on that land package, which as far as just the underground resource that is mineable comes out to 63 million tons at a metal value of $17 billion at an average $275 a ton, which is very economic to mine, which is, and within that, you've got over 200 million ounces of silver, over 1 million ounces of gold, billions of pounds of zinc, billions of pounds of copper and lead. Now, granted, you know, it's $17 billion in metal value, right? You're not going to get 100% recovery. But even if you give it a discount because, you know, the recovery factors vary, let's say you knock off 40%, okay, that $17 million comes $10 billion, right? So you've got a company that's got $10 billion in mineable, recoverable resource trading at a $50 million market cap. And that's just the one land package. The other land package, which they do have title to, that they won, that brought Eric Sprott in, that land package, too, has a mineable resource of over $4 billion in metal value, which they are expanding. That both these properties have not been drilled in over 20 years. And the mineralization comes right at surface, so it means no sinking of a shaft, which means you don't have to fork out hundreds of millions of dollars and have a two-year lag time before you get your first cash flow from it. And yeah, it's just incredible. And that property itself, you know, the they've got about 22 million tons so far at an average of over $400 a ton. But it's not sexy like a gold mine. But if you convert things into gold equivalent, which I do for people in my research report, so that people get a concept, for the one property, that's like having a 10 million ounce mine at something like 5 grams a ton. Right? An underground mine, 5 grams a ton, 10 million ounces of gold equivalent. The other one, it's about 3 million ounces gold equivalent at about over 6 grams a ton. Very economic and unknown and uncovered because they've been in legal battles for 5 years and they were left for dead. Now, granted, the stock has woken up because I put out some research reports on it, and the last few days I think it's up 30-40%, something like that. So it's at a $50 million market cap. But between those two properties, you add it up, you're looking at like a $23-24 billion in underground mining resource. It's crazy, but it's out there. You just have to look for it.
Yeah, you just have to do the due diligence, right, Doc Jones? And that's one thing that, hey, I've been very impressed with your due diligence so far. And one thing to note, I have also posted those 3 reports that you published on Emeritus Resources so that everybody can read over those. You just need to visit our website, kereport.com, and read over those company reports. Doc Jones, we're going to wrap it up here. Great having you back on the show. Thanks for sharing some of your insights in the battery metals and some of the base metals. Everybody, thank you for tuning in for this first hour. The second hour, a special second hour, as it is a replay of the Royalty Roundtable that I recorded and hosted on this Wednesday. So anyone that missed out on that, you can, well, hear most of the highlights in the second hour. And again, that full replay posted on our website this weekend. Doc Jones, thanks for your time. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Oh, thank you, Corey. It was a pleasure talking to you again. Take care.